Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Today, an interview with Vadim Vladimirsky, the CEO of Nerdio. We have a wide-ranging conversation about the future of the cloud, where he sees Windows Virtual Desktops fitting in, and the North Star for Nerdio. Well, Vadim, thanks for being on the show. I want to dive in. Your background's in IT services, right? So tell me a little bit about how you got here.
Oh, boy. So I got into IT services actually when I was in high school, which was a long, long time ago, back in the early 90s or mid 90s. And I got into fixing people's computers and going to their houses after school and, you know, making pretty decent money while in high school. So I kind of liked doing that. And right out of high school, I started working for an IT consulting company while going to college. In the Chicagoland area, I really got into, you know, firewalls and networking and all the types of things that MSPs nowadays handle. And while working there, I sort of had this big vision, you know, what if you didn't need to go on site? Because I spent so much time in the car at that time, as I'm sure a lot of your listeners will relate to. I had to drive and on my headset, you know, walk clients through running WinIP CFG. And remembering the screens by heart, and I'm like, oh my gosh, how much more efficient would this be if I didn't have to be going on site and doing that? So that's sort of how the idea of doing IT services that are hosted was born, at least for me. This was early 2000s, so it was pretty novel at that time. Now it sounds like, yeah, well, of course, that's how you do it. So that's really how I got into it. You know, so high school. IT consulting experience, and then started the business while working as an IT consultant in 2005 with the goal of hosting the entirety of a customer's IT environment, including the desktop piece, and being able to manage all of it centrally without having to go on site as much.
Okay, so that makes perfect sense to me. And we connected because of the launch of Nerdio Manager for MSP. So I'm going to ask a silly question. What's the thing do? What's it do?
Great question. So Nerdio Manager for MSP is an automation platform, and I'm not going to use a term that I don't like using, but I will use it because it will communicate what it is. It's a single pane of glass that lets MSPs price, provision, manage, and optimize Azure-based IT environments with a special emphasis on WVD, Windows Virtual Desktop, sort of being at the core of what it does and everything that's ancillary to Windows Virtual Desktop. So think servers and storage and licensing and networking, everything that you really need to make a virtual desktop environment work is also deployed, managed, optimized, and priced with Nerdio Manager for MSP.
Okay, so I've got a premise, and I'm going to explain to you my premise, and then I'm going to ask you to react to it, okay? So my premise is that virtual desktops are a stepping stone to true virtual applications or streaming applications. And one of the reasons I think game streaming is a space that everyone is interested in is because it's such a hard workload. And once you master it, it's easy to do everywhere because you've solved the difficult technical problem of gaming with a demanding user base, gamers. And so thus, anything in between is a stepping stone there. What's your reaction to that premise?
I largely agree with you. I agree with you that desktops, you know, one of the functions of just an end user computing environment, i.e. a desktop, is to deliver application. And in that feature or that functionality of a desktop, I totally agree with you that it's a stepping stone to a world that's going to look much more like SaaS, all SaaS at some point, right? So there is going to be that transitional period, which is why I think you're calling it a stepping stone. So I think from that perspective, definitely agree with you. There is one other aspect to the end user computing environment for which it may or may not be a stepping stone and which may or may not go away, right? It may go away because it becomes less significant if all the applications are now SaaS. And that is the user's, you know, I guess the user state or the user customization. You know, think about, it's not just the applications that you run, it's the way your background looks and your default printers and your map drives and the way your folder structures are set up. There is so much personalization that goes into our workspace, you know, which is our desktop. And that's really not an application thing, right? So unless all of these applications, which are generally provided by different vendors, unless their launch pad becomes unified, where you can have the same level of customization and control as a user, the desktop is still going to be sort of that thing that you go into to then get to everything else. And it may become a SaaS offering at some point as well. You know, lots of, Citrix and VMware and lots of other companies have this concept of a workspace where you go to a web-based portal and you have shortcuts into your desktops. It's kind of the beginning of that. But if you think about either your Windows or your Mac OS, there is a lot more to it than just a web page that has shortcuts to your favorite apps.
Okay, so then, but if I think about this in kind of a mobile world, and I don't want people to get too hung up on the example, but I've got to use it. But if I think iOS and Android, right, versus Windows and Mac, and I start abstracting a little bit to this level of, well, everything is appified and I'm backing up, then can we see directionally getting where maybe I manage that user experience onto the device and then stream apps? Is that a logical directional piece here?
Potentially, I think, if I look at my own workflow, I'm an Apple, ecosystem person, right? So I have every Apple device there is and they're all very well connected. And
you and me both.
I work my entire day when I'm doing work is I work on a macOS device, with multiple screens, and I do a lot of inter-app sort of work, right? So there is, Excel to a web browser, and there is a lot of things that I'm doing that are not within an app, that are cross-app. Whereas my mobile devices, which I love as well, my iPad is primarily my mobile device, and I use it for everything. It's really sort of a single function at a time kind of a thing. Yes, I can copy and paste, but it's a little awkward. And I think that the concept of apps in an iOS or an Android platform, at least as they stand right now, and this may change in the future, unlike software and the workspace on the Mac OS or Windows machine, is they're not as tightly, or they can't be as tightly integrated with each other. And I think to me, and probably lots of other users, for efficiency and workflow sake, I like having that collaborative experience between my apps on a Mac OS or Windows machine. So I think one of those OSs as of today would need to be available to a user to be the most productive that they can be. In a typical scenario, you know, if you're a user that does only email, then using an app on your iOS device is perfectly fine. There's really nothing else you need. But if you're doing lots of other things, I think you're going to be limited and not as productive as you could be on a Mac or a Windows device. Would you agree? Okay.
I'll buy that as a now. Is it the direction we're going of something along those lines? And I think that's what I'm getting at. But I take your point completely for the now, and then obviously we have to work in the now, but we also have to plan.
Right.
Speaking of the future, then, are you worried about Microsoft just swallowing up this space? I mean, I could see a world where something like their cloud PC project, which while they haven't announced it, the job descriptions are out there, and that's mm-hmm. the idea of them having a fully managed cloud. In a way, that combines Windows virtual desktops with actual MSP value, right? Because they could take on the help desk and stuff. Are you worried about Microsoft swallowing up this space?
It's probably the most common question that I get, right? And you know, about Microsoft, you know, even outside of the context of Cloud PC, but just the WVD platform that keeps being enhanced and improved by Microsoft at a pretty rapid pace. You know, to say not worried at all, I think would be, you know, foolish and short-sighted, and you know, I don't think I won't go as far, but I think strategically we are very sort of aware, and the way we are building our products and delivering our value is in such a way that is complementary and built on top of Microsoft, rather a competitive product, and I will explain why. You know, Microsoft is in the business of hyperscale, mass market, platform type services that can really be leveraged by anybody and everybody for anything and everything, right? Their goal is to be sort of the computer that everyone uses for everything. They, at least as of now, and no one knows what the future will hold, but as of now, they don't go into use cases. For example, the MSP use case is not something Microsoft has really been in, or, you know, is it really has any product for that are built, let's say specifically for MSPs, because it's a very unique, narrow kind of a niche use case, because MSPs have very different needs than enterprise customers or even SMB customers directly. And what we try to do with our product is we try to identify, you know, having been an MSP, knowing what it takes to build and operate an MSP practice, you know, what are the challenges? What does Microsoft provide? And what is the gap, right? And our job is always living in that gap. And that gap will always change. And we're always going to be in that gap. And we're always going to address the biggest and hardest problems first. Because, you know, addressing easy things that can easily be done with a line of code or even with a portal click on the native platform doesn't really add a lot of value. So we're always looking, okay, well, what's the gap? And what's the hardest thing in that gap that we should go after next? And strategically, that's really how we build our product. We understand a very specific use case that we go after, and we solve technical challenges that are specific to that use case. So, you know, your question about Cloud PC, and again, I don't know anything about it other than what's been leaked and the job descriptions and things like that, you know, but I would imagine it's going to be a generic service that's going to be available to the world, right? It's going to be available probably to enterprise customers, probably to SMB customers. How well will it be integrated with MSP's workflows of what they do in general? We don't know. So when it comes out, I'm sure there's going to be a significant amount of gap that we'll be able to add value in. And I'm certain that we're going to be looking at that and building product to help solve that challenge.
Okay, so a completely fair approach, right, to understand. And existing in the gap is a traditional Microsoft partner approach. When being an ISV, there is it's definitely a real value and part of why they have the ecosystem they do. I want to pivot a little bit, and I want to ask about something that is a bit of a pet peeve of mine. And I want to get your take. When I read a lot of the press around the press releases in particular around products in cloud space, and admittedly, you know, the press release for Nerdio Manager did this too. It focuses a lot on costs as it relates to cloud. Our technology will help you manage cloud costs specifically. Of all my concerns about the cloud, when I think about things like security problems of misconfigurations or the lack of zero trust, like cost actually falls much lower onto my stack rank of issues, but lots of people lead with it. Why is there so much leading with cost in the way we're talking about these products?
I think it's a very insightful question, but I think that leading with cost, and I'm going to talk about RK specific rather than maybe than generic, although I think it can be generalized, is, you know, a cost could be a blocker and is a blocker for most MSPs in adopting Azure, period, right? So if an MSP goes to azure.com and opens up the cost calculator and looks, you know, I can buy this Dell server and put it in the client's office. I can buy it from Azure. Let's multiply it by 4 year or 5 year lifetime. Like, what is this? Like, why would I ever do such a thing? You know, I'm going to lose money. Nobody's going to ever pay me for this, right? So cost is definitely one of those things that if you don't address from the beginning, the conversation doesn't happen. There isn't an opportunity to then say, well, once you're in the cloud, you have other challenges. There's managing at scale, there's security, like you said, there's lots of other things that follow, but cost, I think, stands in the way of even beginning that conversation. And it's especially true, very acutely true, when dealing with end user computing, dealing with virtual desktops, because that is a very compute heavy workload. And compute heavy workloads are really the thing that Microsoft wants you to move away from conceptually overall, right? They want you to use PaaS and SaaS, and, you know, cost models that are optimized around those offers, whereas IaaS on the surface just looks expensive. So when you're dealing with doing virtual desktops, which means you're deploying a bunch of VMs, and you don't answer the question of, well, how's this going to make sense to my customer at the price point that they can afford? We don't have anything to even discuss with the MSP, and the MSP doesn't have anything to discuss with their customer. So it's really important with our product that, you know, one of the value pillars, as I mentioned, optimization, and it's primarily cost optimization. And the cost optimization comes primarily from auto-scaling. And auto-scaling works in a virtual desktop environment very intuitively, because if you think about a workload like a desktop, most users use it up to 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week, whatever the number of hours is, but there are 168 hours in every week, which means that less than a quarter of the time it's actually being utilized. So that's sort of a classic perfect use for autoscale to come in and say, if we can figure out when the users will be on, when they are on, we can scale out, scale in, we can do all of different things to match capacity to demand, we can reduce the cost from the number you see on the website at, you know, a dollar down to 23 cents if you scale it down to 40 hours out of the 168 in a week. And it makes a huge difference. And it very quickly shows that without all the other benefits of the product, you can recoup like 4x the cost of the license just in the auto scale saving.
Okay. So I think you've exposed something that I want to kind of dive a little further into there, because when this makes perfect sense for a true dynamic resource. And if I think about Windows desktops, be them physical or now virtual, that's a true dynamic resource, right? I only need it 40 hours of the 168 hours, so thus I can turn it on, and that's where cost savings happens. As we talked through this, you were sort of saying, well, a lot of MSPs go to the cost calculator. They put it in there and they compare against installing a server. That's the wrong comparison, right? Because in exactly the same model, if I'm comparing buying a server to running a server in Azure, well, of course it's way more expensive, but you shouldn't even be comparing those two because they're different workloads. I should actually just make my server workloads dynamic as well. And then you're actually, is the problem there then that the MSPs are not actually truly embracing making those workloads dynamic?
Yes. So I think maybe using the word server workload is maybe too generic as well, right? You don't run a server. You don't just like Windows. You want to run something on that server. So I think if we break that down one level deeper and we say, okay, well, I can run a domain controller in Azure or I can run domain controller on premises, right? So if you're running a domain controller in Azure versus on premises, you compare them, you know, CPU by CPU and RAM by RAM, way more expensive in Azure. Now, there's a couple of things to keep in mind. Number one, there's about five different levers that you can pull to make the cost of that VM in Azure much cheaper than it is listed on Azure.com. There's reserved instances. There's Azure Hybrid Benefit. There is burstable instances. There's all kinds of stuff that we try to enable our partners to be able to leverage, and we tell them what combination of those things is efficient. That's sort of approach number one. Approach number two, if you think about even a domain controller, yes, domain controller needs to be on 24/7, but if it's servicing lots of logins in the morning or during business hours, but it's doing very little servicing on the weekend, it still needs to be available for someone to be able to log in. But if you could dynamically resize that VM down and then size it back up during workload hours, you can also include some autoscale savings. And that's something that we do in our product as well. Now, okay. If you're looking at a file server, then you can say, well, I have a file server on premises. I can have a file server in Azure. Great. Same things apply. You can resize it. You can do reserved instances. Or you can say, well, why am I using a file server to serve up files? Maybe I should be using Azure Files. Maybe I should be using OneDrive or SharePoint, right? There is PaaS alternative and SaaS alternative to some workloads that run on servers, but there's still many that don't have an alternative. And again, that's going to change with time. But there's just some things that you can't put it in the PaaS, especially line of business apps. They just don't exist as a PaaS yet.
Which makes perfect sense. So that actually then transitions to sort of my last question here is, so thinking ahead, we've talked a lot about sort of now, what's your North Star? Like, what's your vision for a fully built nerdy?
You know, our mission at the company, and we sort of repeat this every day, all day to everybody we talk to, is to empower MSPs to build successful cloud practices in Azure. It's not about desktop virtualization necessarily. It's not about the specific workload. It's about matching the needs of the market at the given time with the what's available for Microsoft, and again, bridging that gap, making it affordable, making it easy, making it dynamic and scalable, etc. So I think as time goes on and market demands change, what's available natively changes, I think we're just going to have to keep evolving. I mean, if you look at the cadence of product releases and you know how many versions we do, we are not in the business of building a product and then just going to sell it and you know signing up as many customers as we can and sort of growing horizontally on something that we've built. We're really in the business of consistently identifying market needs based on customer feedback, based on talking to MSPs and them telling us, hey, it would be great to integrate X, Y, and Z now. And that becomes just the next thing that's going to be part of the Nerdio Manager, Nerdio for Azure, whichever product that may be a part of. So I think the end vision of Nerdio is difficult to articulate because I think it's difficult to articulate what does IT or what does cloud look like in its final state. I think one is going to be dependent on the other, but it's always going to be driven by our mission of empowering MSPs to be successful in Azure.
Okay, so now my final question, because you've opened sure. up the door, is so let's take that quick step back. What do you think the final vision of what the cloud looks like? Particularly, let's limit that to the small to mid-market style company. What do you think they're leveraging in that future world?
You know, I think one likely scenario is a truly SaaS-based world with very little, you know, sort of edge device complexity, right? I don't want to say little intelligence because there's a lot of stuff that happens on the edge, but maybe, you know, maybe sort of the iPhone. Kind of an analogy where you have, you know, basic devices that don't do a lot themselves, that have a SaaS type of an approach to working with data and applications. I think it's going to be a very long transition period, right? I mean, you know, it's not going to be 2 years. It's probably not even going to be 5 years, you know, and certain segments are going to, certain industries will transition faster, certain's not. But I think it's going to be a long transition period. And if you think about, especially in the enterprise space, but if you think about if there's even one or two apps that can't fit that vision, you still are dragged down by everything else you have to do to support those apps.
Thanks for listening to this bonus episode of The Business of Tech. Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. I'll talk to you again tomorrow.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.